It's time for Stars on Sports,
a podcast radio show dedicated to sharing stories about our athletic program at Lansing Community College.
LCC Athletics has a strong tradition.
24 national championship wins.
Over 170 All-Americans.
19 MCCAA All-Sports trophies.
Stars on Sports will introduce you to individuals that have contributed to our program's success and give you the backstory on what it takes to develop it.
We'll also dive into and break down the topics and issues facing athletic departments across the nation and right here at LCC.
This is Stars on Sports. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Stars on Sports. I'm joined today by our Assistant Athletic Director, Stephen Cutter, and our producer, Jeremy Robinson.
Hey.
And today, gentlemen, we're going to be talking about the team. And Coach Cutter, I know you're happy because it's been a long time before I've been able to get some Michigan references on here. And when most people, I think, in the athletic business hear the team, they attribute the quote to Michigan football coach Bo Schembechler. And I'm going to paraphrase a little bit of that quote. It's, you know, no person is more important than the team. No coach is more important than the team. We win a championship because of the play as a team. We believe in the team. We do not criticize. It's great to be part of a team. And when I prepare for our podcast each week, I try and there's usually a theme that sticks out with me. Like, people keep like repeating it to me in our conversations over the last week. And the one that hit me up in the last week is the best team had the best teammates. And I heard that a couple times through podcasts and other things. So, and I know that's important to us here at LCC. And there's a number of different ways to look at teams, even in the individual sport that we offer here at LCC. You know, we have nine teams here, six head coaches, over 15 assistant coaches, 170 student athletes. You know, we're part of a college campus, so, you know, different departments on campus. And we've worked hard of being a team as a whole instead of each team kind of being their own. And we've shared that on previous podcasts. But, and we've also talked about contagious proximity and accountability partners in previous podcasts, which all lead to part of a team. And to be successful, it takes a team. And it takes a team to be aligned and to be on the same page. I mean, I think you can be successful without that, but you can be even more successful, and successful at the highest, you're smirking over there, successful at the highest level, being a part of a team. And we know that, you know, one person, one, you know, bad apple can totally prevent that from happening. So listening to a John Gordon podcast recently, you know, his three things to be successful were a mission, a team, and a scoreboard. So, you know, I think we can talk about the other, we'll tie into those other two, because definitely the scoreboard is a part of athletics, even though he was talking not just the scoreboard on the field, but, you know, scoreboard of, you know, stacking wins, mm-hmm. which is a common theme. Right. So, again, so what do you guys think about? I mean, you both have been part of teams. You both have led teams, and I truly believe it's you know, the go fast, go alone, go far, go together, and I truly believe you need a team around you to be successful. And that was one of the things that excited me about coming to LCC was the success they had in trying to be a part of this team, but taking it to another level.
Yeah, I agree. I think you do have to have great teammates if you're going to have a great team. And for the most part, most things are pretty much, if you're going to have success, you're going to need a lot of help. Usually what the biggest thing that I see from a coaching standpoint that plays into great teams is not so much the skill piece of it, it's the selflessness and how selfless you can get teams to be, because that's really where you get the support. You get, you know, a word like mudita, which is vicarious joy for others' successes. That's kind of where you start getting those teams that do different stuff. And most of the time you'll find that there certainly are certain skill levels, whether it's in the business world or the sports world, that are very helpful for those teams. But really, I believe it comes down to how selfless those individuals on that team can be. And it's more about not worrying about who gets the credit and just more worried about the scoreboard of life and seeing other people succeed around you.
And I agree. And I think it is something leaders have to do, with build a team. And, you know, back to a John Gordon reference of the energy bus, getting everyone on the bus on the same page. But to your point about building a team or having, you know, selfless teammate, that's starts with the coach, starts with the leader of the department, of how they model and teach that. But I think there's many ways teams can go about that. And community service is a way I think some teams can do it, by teaching them to give. Because also the other thing that community service activities do is team bonding activities, which is another, I think, big thing that teams can do to help build a team and get them to work together. I'm a big believer in our team doing like an overnight trip to try and do some bonding things, or doing a bonding might not be the right word, but I know you, in your leadership class, you do, you know, trust walks and other things like that, just to kind of intentionally and purposely build that team and build relationship, because that's really, you know, what it comes down to in building a team is developing those relationships, so people can know and trust and believe and hold accountable those other teammates, because you do need team leaders to help build that team and be coaches of the team. So I do know you do some of those things to help improve that team atmosphere, which some call culture, but I'm just thinking in general, the general term of team.
I think that we've found the biggest value in finding out what teams are made of is adversity. And if you really want to find out, you know, what a team's made of, and we're not just talking about sports teams, but in general, what families are made of, what businesses are made of, there's going to have to be some mountain in the middle, and you're going to find out who's going to climb it and who's going to climb it with you. And that's in the sports world. That's really the best measuring of what type of team you've got. And there's thousands of examples in the sports world of teams that have faced some type of adversity, and then all of a sudden you hear the terms, they pulled together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Overcome adversity.
Yes. Yeah. When you said that, I thought automatically, because we was talking about sports, but my mind went to like families who have a mom who has to go to school, and how everybody around her has to step up and pick up different things while she's in class and stuff like that. And it's the selflessness in that of being a team and still getting the win. Because at the end, she gets a degree. Financially, they get an upgrade, and it benefits everybody. But that's really cool.
That's a great point. I had a superintendent each year. He would give out a lapel pin for like the theme for the year. And one year he gave out a wagon. And to be part of a team is everyone has to pull on the wagon. And some days I might pull the wagon more, and some days you might pull the wagon more. But overall, as a team, the goal is to pull the wagon forward. And doing that, the other people stepping up when maybe you're having a bad day, and you step up when you don't have a bad day. Because I think there's some rules to being part of a team. And it leads right into that is, you know, everyone has like all these rules, don't be late to practice. But to me, it comes down to, and I can't think of any other rules right now, but don't let your teammates down, do your job, and represent your team in school well. And those three general things, I think, sum up all those little rule that we could sometimes put in place, that it's still being part of that team, part of the respect you have for each other, the being able to pick up if, you know, you use the mom's case of working, but our case of a kid, you know, breaking up with his or her girlfriend or boyfriend, or failing an exam, that, you know, it's part of a team to pull your teammate up. I mean, encouragement is a big part of a team, but also stepping up and maybe performing at a level to help your team out if one of your other players hasn't. So the question with a team, though, and you know, we've had this conversation before with talent and hard work. Can a team with less talent win over a team with great players that doesn't play as a team be better, or could a team that had less talent with a better team atmosphere beat that other team?
I lost every single time to that team who worked together better.
Yeah.
Like, every time. Like, me and my boys, we could be talented. We can dribble, dunk, do all this stuff. But that team that know how to move that ball and play as a team, we're down 20.
There's certainly lines on it, too.
Yeah,
you have to have a certain level of skill.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And the teams that lack the skill are only going to be able to get to a certain level, even if they work really well together. So there's some lines there. But for sure, I think with families, whether it's a team family or your own family, you're going to work best together when you're on the same page and you're selfless and you have the, you know, a huge word like trust and another big one like love. And
that's good. You know,
there's some there's some empathy for what others are going through.
Yeah.
And I think especially in coaching, it doesn't matter what level, you're bringing people together and they all have their own things in their lives that are happening. And sometimes for us, it might seem really simple, you know, that they need to get a new battery in their car because it's getting colder, you know.
Right.
Well, it's not a big deal, you know, a few hundred bucks, you can get a new battery. But to them, that could be a lot, and who's going to do it?
Right.
You know, they're away from home. And sometimes there's relationship issues, there's homesick issues, there's class issues, you know, there's friends issues, there's apartment issues, there's playing issues, you know, and you got all this stuff. And I think it really comes down to, you know, trust, love, and some compassion for what's going on.
I definitely think those are like the glue of team, is, and you hit it, love and empathy are two big ones, and then trust in there too, of what makes a great team a great team. And I think we all agree from what we just said that throughout history of sports and championships, great players haven't won championship because they weren't surrounded by a great team. They couldn't do it by themselves. That it took them to either get some supporting players, or just developing that team atmosphere. And you, I think you're right that one of the most telling things to know if you have a great team or not is the adversity part. And I'm I always talk about how that first contest is a great way to tell where your team can go, because that's really the first adversity you probably face in a season, that it's not, you know, on the field or on the court, that can determine not where you're at, but where you can go. But
usually the adversity and the wins or the losses that happen, those usually aren't big enough to see kind of where things are at. Usually it has to be a little bit deeper or bigger than just a loss on the court, because those happen so often that they kind of get breezed over. There usually has to be something a little bit bigger than that, for, you know, maybe just a little bit bigger of a mountain to climb.
Yeah, and injuries could be a part of that.
Can be.
I do think losses can be, not early on in the season, not that first contest, I agree, because there's so much of the season in front of you, and even the sport that play less contests. But I do believe losses, whether it's a losing streak, whether it's even a slump in like hitting or shooting, those are small enough, but for a team that has high expectations or high pressure, that can weigh on that team on whether, you know, they're going to reach that level of success that they thought they were going to reach. In the end, it's still how you handle it. I didn't bring this quote today, but it was from Pirates of the Caribbean. I saw on a podcast. The problem, not the problem. It's your attitude on how to handle the problem is the problem. And I think that's true on a team. And we've talked about, you know, ERO lots of times on this podcast too. But back to that adversity piece of how coaches and team leaders handle that adversity within the team, because it can be, you know, we've talked about influence before too, where trying to influence the majority of the middle group to that you know, focus group and that group that's all in, and adversity can be that tail for a team of which direction that team goes, and then how soon you address it and how much you let it, you know, feather throughout that season.
I was thinking, you think that appreciation plays a big part of it, like appreciation and small things? Because I know, like, if you are, like, on a baseball team, you may be on a bench, but your mindset is, you know what, most people don't have my position, or they're not able to play on the team, and I actually got to play on the college team. So, like, just having an appreciation of small things. I get to travel and see a different city that I never seen before. I think that could play a big part in building a good team, is having appreciation in just those small things.
So true, and it's probably one of the harder things to do, but a couple words I use all the time, and I've talked about it, is like seek perspective. And those two words, even though it's pretty easy to do, it's hard to remember to do that. And it's just perspective. 7% of the kids will play a college sport that play high school sports, you know. So I'm part of 7%.
Yeah.
The population, you know, and, and it's those kind of things where you seeking perspective is huge in everybody's life. It's the saying of, you know, this might be tough, but somebody has it worse.
And, you know, I used the word encouragement earlier because I think the word that I were thinking to make a team great were encouragement and accountability.
Genuine.
But the point you make, Journey, is when I think of appreciation, I think of recognition. And I think good teams do find ways to recognize those small wins and show appreciation. And I think I even struggle with it, because even with my own staff, of showing appreciation, because it just expect, you know, if you have a high standard, that's what you expect to happen.
Right.
And sometimes we forget to recognize and show that appreciation, which could help back to the kid that's struggling with a battery or with something else in their life, that if we show appreciation of stacking a small win in a sport, whether it's getting a big hit or making a great play or hitting a jump shot, that that will help with confidence and trust and buy-in of that team. Because in the end, you know, we're selling a team that they have to have buy-in. So I think appreciation and recognition is a big part of that. And I think coaches, the good coaches, do a great job of that on a daily basis, especially if you're using competition as a way to get better, of finding ways, not just on the scoreboard either, but the little things. And I've seen drills from coaches recognize, like, the focus of that drill. Instead of, like, the score of the game, you get a score, you get a point for not making an error, or you get a point for grabbing a rebound, and using scoreboard like that to develop the focus on a skill that you're trying to improve that team. But in the end, it's really, you know, appreciation or recognition of succeeding in that task. And I'm sure you have examples of, I mean, your drills are built around that, of trying to, on what you're trying to focus on, not just the overall score of the game. So yeah, I think appreciation is a part of that.
Yeah. I think you're trying to compete or have a competitive environment, and people are going to fail in those environments. And if your competitive environment is the scoreboard, which for a lot of athletes it is, it's understanding that it's more than just what the numbers are on the board. It's what kind of person can you be. And I think the best teams really have the best people, and they don't always have the best players. They have the best people.
That's awesome.
I agree. And that comes down at our level, recruiting and recruiting people that fit into the system you're trying to build. It's a lot, not easier at our level compared to high school level, where you're dealing with a fixed population of what you have in those hallways. Where here, I think the great coaches have a, back to John Gordon, have a mission for their team, and then recruit, which is a huge part of our team, student athletes that fit that mission. And I want to hit on this. I only briefly touched on earlier, even in the individual sports. And at Lansing, we have cross country and track. And I know some of the young, and they went at a high level, but they like being a part of a team. And even as an individual, they like the team helping them be successful. And whether it's a coach or another player, or even the athletic trainer, is all part of that team. So even in the individual sports, you know, I think we lose focus that it's an individual goal and an individual performance, but it took them a team to get there. And I think they realized that it, that team that really helped them be successful.
Yeah, it, especially for track, because I ran track, and it's huge to have good people around you. Because if you're the fastest person, there's nobody else that's even close to you, you're not going to get better.
Right.
So you need people actually you're running with in your practice that actually can push you, that have the good attitude to run hard. Because you can just like, I ran three laps and do the bare minimum. But if everybody's pushing hard.
Contagious proximity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's exactly what it is. And if you're a 65 and you're always a 65 and you're around eight people that are 85s, you're going to start raising that 65 up to a 75.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But if you're around somebody that's in 85 for one day, you might raise up a little bit, but then you're going to come right back down to what you naturally are, 65. And so the sayings like iron sharpens iron, that kind of stuff, that's all very, very true.
And to your point, Journey, it's the help up front of getting you to be better, but it's also afterwards when you accomplish your goal is the sharing it with somebody.
Right.
I mean, whether it's your family, whether it's your team, it's still that be fun to be a part of something greater than yourself.
Yeah,
I think
agree.
That's what everybody wants.
Exactly.
To be a part of something greater than themselves.
Yeah, yep. I agree.
And what a good way to end it, but that's what a team is accomplishing
something greater than yourself.
But that's not how we're ending it. I still got
the question. Yeah.
You know, and this is great. Actually, I watched one of our previous podcasts, and it led to this one today, and we had a little conversation after our last podcast. And today, gentlemen, we're going to be talking Pop-Tarts. You know, and I think Pop-Tarts get a bad rap in society. Jerry Seinfeld just did a movie on Pop-Tarts, and I think most people think, why do you put a rectangular thing in a box that is bland? And, you know, I did some research on there. There's over 30 flavors of Pop-Tarts, and the first question is, frosted or unfrosted Pop-Tart?
Frosted.
Frosted for sure, and you should look up the history of Pop-Tarts. I think some kids, you know, one of the companies here in Michigan was making them, and they thought they were terrible, so they threw them in the dumpster, and some kids found them and dug them out, and they just thought they were incredible, and that's kind of how they started rolling with those.
Okay.
So,
yeah. I did not know that.
Wow.
But I agree, there's no place for an unfrosted Pop-Tart. It has to be frosted.
And they go best in a toaster.
Okay. See, I don't need a toaster. Actually, I like them toasted, but I don't need a toaster. I wasn't even gonna ask that question, Journey. What's your?
To me, a toaster is like the extra. You know, if I don't have a toaster, I can grab and go. But if I got the toaster, it takes it to the next level.
Okay, I agree. Yeah. I can easily grab and go, but having it toasted does take it to another level. So then the last question is. Your favorite flavor?
Chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
Favorite flavor? It depends on how I'm feeling. You know, I'm the Chingatender man who likes the different sauces. So I like to be able to change it up whenever I feel like it. So brown sugar, strawberry. Yeah.
Okay.
Don't shake your head, man.
Yeah,
that's
okay,
good stuff.
Journey.
It's so good. I'm gonna order you some, but yeah.
Brown sugar and
strawberry is classic. S'mores is real good too.
My two answers, brown cinnamon and s'mores.
Yeah.
So, again, I think it's that Peeps marshmallow thing, two of us align and one of us is, you know, not part of this team,
It's okay to be different.
Yeah. But I do agree. I like different kinds. I do like brown cinnamon and s'more. You know, they have new kinds out, which are getting a little crazy. They have strawberry milkshake. They actually have Boston cream donut, which I like Boston cream donut and tried it. And
the Oreo one's not bad either.
See,
you might like the Oreo since you like chocolate. Okay.
So again, branch out there a little bit. Help overcome that bad rap. But,
and when's the last time you've had a Pop-Tart?
You know, when I've been on this job 3 years, and my first year and a half, I had Pop-Tarts in my snack stash. Cinnamon, brown sugar. They usually come with cherry, cinnamon, brown sugar, and one other flavor. The last year I haven't, but I still get them. I'm the only one who eats them in our family. So I just had the Boston cream donut probably about a month ago.
So you have a snack stash?
I do.
Okay.
Hey.
My cupboard.
And where's your office?
Where's that at?
Cookies and peanut butter and graham crackers.
Okay.
Great behind me in my
great
top
to know.
Yep.
Yep. Grand Cracker Stash is going to get raided.
That's okay. What are we there for? We need snacks in our business. And that's where I got hooked on Pop-Tarts, with running track. It seemed to be a common, easy snack that you could take to a long all-day track meet and have and eat. So good stuff.
Yeah, that's good.
Good stuff. So enjoy your Pop-Tarts. Until the next time we meet, go Stars. Stars on Sports is recorded live at the WLNZ Studios. Engineering and production assistance are provided by Dedalion Lowry and Jeremy Robinson. You can listen to this episode and other episodes of Stars on Sports on demand at lccconnect.org. To find more information about our athletic program, visit lccstars.com. Thanks for listening. Go Stars!
Featuring the faculty, staff, students, and others that helped to make Lansing's premier college what it is today. LCC Connect, Mid-Michigan's connection to Lansing Community College. To find out more about our featured programs or to listen on demand, visit us at lccconnect.org.
LCC Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Lansing Community College's dual enrollment program offers the opportunity for qualified high school students to earn college credit while working towards their high school diploma. Dual enrollment lets students receive educational advancement in areas where the student's interest is displayed, especially in courses and academic areas not available in the student's high school. To find out more information about dual enrollment, visit lcc.edu.
You don't usually get a stock tip from a 16-year-old, but I'm here to tell you about a different kind of stock. It's called Better Futures, a stock for social change that's not about making money. Instead, you invest to help students like me go to college. This is beyond a simple donation. It's the opportunity for America to invest in its kids and take an active stake in the future of the country. The return on your investment isn't money. What you get back is knowing you protected our potential. So one day, that potential can grow up to become surgeons and architects, executives and engineers, people who can change the future just by being a part of it. My name is Alicia, and I'm your dividend.
Invest in better futures with UNCF. Visit uncf.org/invest. A mind is a terrible thing to waste, but a wonderful thing to invest in. A public service announcement brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
Feeling froggy? Well, leap into 20-plus podcasts at lccconnect.org.
At Home with Economics is a space where we explore business, workforce, and community development initiatives and how they impact our daily lives. I'm your host, Bo Garcia.
Find out more and listen on demand, lccconnect.org.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America.
I just don't think my family would be as happy as they are without the support that I received from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Go to pva.org to learn more.
The Lansing Community College Foundation provides scholarships that make education possible, change students' lives, and uplift our community. The foundation annually accepts scholarship applications from November through January. Learn more at lcc.edu/scholarships.
LCC.
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Now Spinning, the official podcast of the Lansing Community College Vinyl Record Club. We meet twice a month to listen to vinyl and talk about music. Stay tuned to learn about how you can get in touch with us and attend our meetings. My name is Simon Medina, and with me today I have...
Leo Ackerman.
Jacob Zuckvik.
Very good, and today's topic is going to be the music that was played on our meeting on August 15th, 2024. So... there wasn't as many people as usual in this meeting, but that did not stop them from playing a quite interesting variety of music here. The first song that got played was a Simon and Garfunkel song, which I don't think it's even an original Simon and Garfunkel song. I think it's a cover off of like their first album, which is like their least well-known nice one, I think.
It's a nice song. Yeah, soft little boppy thing.
That's the like their whole first album's. It's not like anything they did after. It's really just straight up as folky as you can get. It's just two dudes and a guitar and they're harmonizing together. Like, what more do you want?
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
Sound of Silence was off of that before they added all the electric stuff to it. Mm-hmm. That was a whole thing. Great band.
Yeah.
And then after that, this is the first of about four songs by the band that we can't escape from, that being Ween.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that three songs from Ween were played was because they recently reissued their 1994 iconic album, Chocolate and Cheese, which is my like third favorite album by them, but it's like one of my top 50 albums of all time. I don't even know if I can make a list like that, but it's so good. It's kind of in the grand scheme of Ween, it's where they stopped. They went from just being two dudes and a guitar and a bunch of like sound effects to a proper like studio band with like a drummer and a bassist and like a whole setup. And another thing I'd like to mention is that a couple days after we play all these Ween songs, we have a great time playing Ween, they go on another indefinite hiatus again. So that's my fault for talking about Ween too much in these. I think that there was some kind of cosmic repercussion.
Secretly, the brothers are huge fans of this podcast.
Absolutely.
And they're like, we're oversaturating this podcast. We don't want them to talk about us.
Yeah, they got
to
give
us
a break. And also, coincidentally, Oasis said they were reuniting the same day that Ween went on hiatus. So I'm just saying,
whatever.
Maybe they had something to do with it. Where was Liam Gallagher?
Oasis is going to last like 6 months. They're going to make millions of dollars and be like, a bye. But
I respect
that's what I expect to happen.
I respect the grind and I respect what they're going for, but it isn't fair.
They killed Ween for it. It wasn't worth it.
It's not worth the cost.
Somebody made like the monkey's paw wish and like the finger curled and it killed Ween. That's all. That's the only way to explain it.
It killed Ween and Black
reference.
MIDI.
Yes. And Black MIDI too. Oh, man. But anyway, a couple good Ween songs got played. The one I played that I actually want to talk about was the song Freedom of 76, which is a beautiful little tribute to the town of Philadelphia in all aspects of it. It's like this beautiful like falsetto song. The whole time Gene Ween is just like singing his heart out. Apparently at one point Ween went on tour with the Foo Fighters and Dave Grohl came out and said, I wish I could write a song that is anywhere as beautiful as Freedom of 76. So go listen to that song. That's all I have to say. It's a real quote. Look it up. I'm not kidding. Or I might just be imagining this.
But Dave Grohl's like the nicest guy in the
world.
We
love Dave Grohl.
So,
great friend of the show. Leo, you look shocked. What's going on?
I did not know Dave Grohl knew Ween.
I don't know why, right?
I'm surprised, but like I didn't think that there would be any connection there. They just feel like entirely separate worlds.
They were kind of a grunge band
at times.
Kind
of,
but at the point where Ween had gotten like a bit more attention, I feel like he had already begun like the Foo Fighters type thing, and he would be like sort of above that.
Well, that was like
his world.
Though it was the mid-90s.
It took some years before the Foo Fighters like were mainstream successes.
It was one of their early.
You know, for
I think
a while,
it was
like, oh, that's the drummer for Nirvana. But it took a few years before Foo Fighters were like a big deal in their own right.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was like before their second album even came out, so it's before Everlong or anything like that. So they were still kind of. I don't want to say unknown, but they weren't as like nearly as famous as they were going to be.
Right. Mm-hmm. Anyway, high praise, though. High
great.
Praise.
Oh, absolutely. Great song. Love that song. However, there are other bands here that we should probably spend a little bit of time talking about now that I think about it.
Unfortunately. Yeah.
So. I've got the next couple songs that got played in order I really enjoyed. Soft Fuzzy Man by Lemon Demon. Mm-hmm. I'm a classic Lemon Demon fan. Remember Finding Stuff on Newgrounds.
Oh, wow.
If anybody, no. Do you remember 2005 as well as I do? It was a time.
I caught the tail end of that a little bit.
But yeah, Lemon Demon, great. Hope new stuff is coming soon. But that whole album, I can't remember what it was called, Nightmare Phone or something like that.
Spirit Phone,
there you go. But is great. Lemon Demon, every song is funny, and this is a classic example. Funny song, funny premise, but also like thoroughly solid music.
Absolutely.
Really great music and genuinely enjoyable to listen to and just a good time. So
absolutely.
Highly recommend Lemon
Demon. Lemon
Demon. Love that it gets played at a bunch of episodes.
Great friend of the show.
So the next song is Cinnamon Temple by Hiatus Coyote. A little bit of funny spelling on that, but I'm sure you can figure it out. I had never heard of this band. I had never heard of this song. I don't know who played this at the meeting, so I wasn't paying attention.
I think Sarah was the one who played it.
It's
yeah,
awesome. It's a great song.
Oh yeah,
it's,
thank you for bringing that.
I'm gonna say it right now, and sorry, but it reminds me of King Gizzard and Lizard Wizard. Mm-hmm. But
it's neo psychedelia. I get
and,
why.
It's two bingo, yeah. Two things off the bingo chart already.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard of Hiatus Coyote. At least I hadn't heard their music yet. Like, I was familiar with the name enough, but I hadn't ever really gone out of my way to listen to it. But it's a really great track. I think that's from the record that came out this year. I'm forgetting the name of it. But
recent stuff.
I'm probably going to check it out because of that. So thank you very much, Sarah.
I added them to my Spotify as soon as I went back and listened to this playlist. I was like, oh, I didn't even notice this at the meeting. This is great.
They're on the list somewhere. Don't worry, they're on the list.
Mm-hmm. Next, we got Cross-Eyed and Painless by Talking
There
Heads.
They are. You can't get
there
away
they
them.
Are. Let's scratch another one off the bingo sheet.
I wish we had, I'm meaning to get an actual bingo sheet for this. I think that would be magical. Anyway.
As long as it remains the bingo sheet and not the drinking game, because we don't want people
that's
to get
frowned
actually
upon.
Hurt.
No, none of that. Yeah. I mean, we talked about this whole album at length. Really good song.
It's pretty good.
It's all right. I mean, it's all right. Yes,
it's all right. It's serviceable.
Best song ever. I don't know. Second best song on the album. I don't know. My
it's a great track.
Next song. We're just going down the playlist. If you guys haven't figured it out, we're just going down the playlist.
Yeah.
The playlist available on the website. Absolutely, go check out the playlists if you can't go to the meetings because we listen to some great music. So I played this song. Everybody's Free. By the artist Rosala. It's a great song that has been remixed about 30 million different times. So I played, I can't remember what version, but I have a record of Rosala stuff that is all remixes and by a bunch of different artists. The best version, in my opinion, Aquagen, that remix of the song is just great and really uplifting. The version I have is also very good. Unfortunately, the only one that is available on Spotify, not that good of a remix. It's just fine. It's not great. It's just fine. But it really takes away sort of the dramatic feel. And this is a song like classic 90s, early 90s club song. Everybody's feel free to feel good. Really has that like club vibe of like, yeah, go out here and have fun. Like, don't worry about your worries. Don't worry about going to work tomorrow. Just go nuts. And I've just always jammed with that vibe. And it's a great song. Rosala, great singer. Just released a new album this year. Different sort of stuff than just 90s dance songs. Highly recommend.
After that, we have a fun little, I think it's an Afro-funk song.
Yes,
right?
It is. It's from the album. It's a compilation, but I love this compilation. It's just Africa Airways 02, which is called Funk Departures 1973-1982, which appears to be the second in a series if the name is to be trusted.
Mm-hmm.
It would be weird if they just made an Africa Airways 2 and not an Africa Airways 1, though. I have to say that.
It has happened.
And that track is Nariosa Que Le Folla by Pastor Lape.
I love this song. It's so good.
Great track.
I've been jamming this a lot. Like after the meeting, this is the one I think that stuck with me the most.
It's like chill, but still upbeat.
Absolutely.
Which is, I mean, just great. Great. I love those type of songs.
Absolutely.
Moving a little bit further down the list, we have Hold On Dear Brother by the Beach Boys.
And this is a weird one. It's like it's like the least Beach Boys sounding Beach Boys song you could find because the lead vocalist was a guy who literally joined the band for this album and the one after, and it's written by him, and it's not written, none of like, well, they're all like singing background, but like none of the actual original Beach Boys had any hand in writing it, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So it just sounds like a country rock song, and like you listen to it, and you're like, all right, that's pretty good. And you're like, the Beach Boys, and you're like, who did that? How does that happen?
Ricky Fatar.
Yeah, how did he get on there?
There's Blondie so Chaplin many too. Beach Boys songs that are just out of left field. And
no,
like,
yeah,
what?
That's what they do. Yeah, that's this whole era.
Also, when your career goes like 40 years, it's going to
happen.
Yeah,
you're going to do some weird stuff. I mean, it's not even weird. It's just like it sounds nothing like what they would do before or after. It's a nice little song.
I'll mention next Junko Ohashi. I don't actually remember the name of this song.
It's in Japanese here, and I unfortunately can't read that.
But yeah, classic Japanese city pop.
Mm.
It's another one of those songs that absolutely did not make it to the West at the time. Stayed in Japan, was kind of popular, and found new life on the internet like 10 years ago. And I'm, again, one of those guys that it came up in my YouTube recommended, and I was this is great. Along with other artists like Mitsuki Matsubara and stuff like that, where it's just stuff that you never would have any reason to hear. And I'm so glad that just the internet made it happen by accident.
Thank you, YouTube algorithm.
Japanese city pop is great.
Absolutely.
It's more chill vibes. You know, I'm always talking about how I like chill songs, just love anything that you can jam to and feel good about. And that whole genre, well, it has hard emotional songs. I'm sure that's not the ones that are popular, at least in the West. And it's always a lot of fun to hear music that is really clearly based in older styles, but is being taken by a culture that those styles didn't necessarily come from, and is being given new life and is being written for, and it's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Highly recommend.
And then moving on from that one, we've got kind of a total tonal 180 into a couple, like two punk songs and then Typo Negative. First of all, Melvins, very influential band. I don't know if they're like, well, they're like, they're well known now, but like.
For the time they were, they're
like mostly big now. I think people most know about them. Like I personally, I've only heard about them through like Nirvana and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like they mentioned them being major inspirations for them.
I think they're like the godfathers of sludge metal and that sort of thing. Big influence on Kurt Cobain and his ethos. And in the years following, Buzz Osborne and Melvins has been cited as like a massive influence on artists in heavier genres like metal and punk and whatnot. I personally haven't gone too deep into their discography, but everything I've liked, I've heard. I've heard bits and pieces of Houdini, thought it was brilliant. Yeah, just a great song.
Yeah.
Great band.
I'll just mention Typo Negative. Just wild stuff. Peter Steele, wild dude.
Yeah, very interesting man.
Yeah, very interesting.
Heard a lot of things.
Was one of those people that like seems to have been kind of a good guy sometimes and kind of just totally nuts at other times.
Mm-hmm.
Just a fascinating character and a great song. Just like a classic kind of like modern hard rock with like a pretty heavy goth vibe without drifting directly into just being like metal.
Yeah.
There was actually like a, I don't want to say heated, but there was a very in-depth like argument at the meeting to say like, what genre is this?
And I don't remember being
there was a couple people who were like trying to like, they weren't like arguing, but they were just like confused. They were trying to figure it out and they could not like place it. They're like, it's goth metal or something. And they were confused. I don't even know what I wrote down for this one when I made like the spreadsheet for this meeting,
mm-hmm.
but I think that's just a testament to like how like it doesn't quite fit into any of those archetypes really smoothly, you know.
Well, it's because it's a unique sound,
right?
And that's part of why it's cool. And I mean, a unique sound at the time, maybe. Yeah. A lot of bands sound like it now because it was kind of influential. But yeah, I don't remember being part of that discussion. I think we were busy looking at pictures of Peter Steele. If you know, you know.
Yep. Mm.
Next, we got Cool Water by Marty Robbins.
What a guy. Great friend of the show.
Best friend of the show, Marty Robbins.
This album is an iconic album.
I know most people, at least today, know about it from like, you know, Fallout New Vegas and all that. But
yeah, the song Big Iron. Yeah.
Big Iron. Great song.
It is a really good song.
This album is there's like a list. It's like a book. I don't know if it's like an actual book somewhere anymore, but it's like the 1001 albums you have to listen to before you die. And in chronological order, this is like the fifth one, I think, or something like that.
Okay.
So a while back, I was kind of going through that, just trying to like, you know, well, if it's that important, I should probably listen to it. I'm not really a country guy, you know, but
if I may interrupt briefly, I would like to point out that I think this is a classic example of a Western album, not a country album.
Mm.
Similar though they may be, and like inexorably linked for all of time, I think this is a Western album, not a country album.
Yeah. And then this is like another thing. It's almost, I want to say, like, is it a concept album, you think? Because all the songs are about cowboys and...
I'd say so.
Yeah, basically gunfighter
sure
ballads, if you will.
That way,
well, the album is called Gunfighter Ballads and a Trail Song, so there was a theme going into it. And I got to say, like, this album has, like, not just, like, the big songs, like, you know, El Paso, Big Iron, two great songs, but, like, one I really like is the song The Hanging Tree. That's really good. That's a good song. And then, hang on, I gotta check the, like, actual track list now, because there was another one I wanted to shout out. Yeah, here we go. Yeah, Saddle Tramp, that's another great song off that album. That is such a good one. Anyway, they're all good. Yeah.
Every album we've mentioned so far today, we've said,
seriously,
check
though,
it out.
Go listen to Gunfighter Ballads and Trail Songs, even if you don't really like country music.
Also,
it's a good time.
Come to record club meetings, because
if there's
it's always good music.
We never play anything bad, and that's a guarantee.
Okay, well, you know.
That's a guarantee. The Laughing Gnome is a heater.
We've had days where we intentionally played
Double
music,
Weezer is fire. We've had nothing but fire. Anyway. Please come to the meetings. It's
bad is very subjective. Bad is subjective. Remember that. Mm-hmm. Anytime someone says you have bad music taste, tell them subjective.
Tell them
if they're right.
I love the Laughing Gnome.
Leo mentioned Weezer, so that's another bingo.
You know what? Anyway. We almost made it.
Yeah, we almost did. Oh, anyway, moving on.
I'd like to highlight Iron Lung by King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard.
Chop that off the list again.
That's from Ice, Death, Planets, Mushrooms, and Lava, I believe it is.
Lungs is in there somewhere, I think.
Somewhere in there. Bunch of those terms, in any order, you'll get it. Great song. This is from kind of the end part of that record. It's more of a jazz rock vibe from them, which they kind of leaned into on stuff like The River and, of course, their collaboration with Mild High Club, which I think is Sketches of Brunswick East.
That's on the list, man. It's on the list. You know what the joke is? Like, everyone's like, oh, by the time you finish listening to the discography, they're going to put out another album. And they did.
It's true.
So it's true. It's not even a joke. This one is definitely up there on the list. I really like the, it's like the jazz rock direction they're taking it, like the psychedelic jazz music. It tickles my brain. It's a good one.
It's a really, really nice shift from their, I think it used to be their normal thing. They used to do more garage rock, stuff like that. I honestly think they're kind of starting to lean more towards the jazz rock stuff and towards jamming in general. I think that's becoming a big part of their approach.
They're just so experimental.
Very.
And that's like, you can't even put some sort of expectation on it or name on it, because it's so often it's like, what on earth are they even doing? You know, and that's great. You know what I mean? That just total willingness to be experimental kind of on every album.
Mm-hmm. From each record to the next, you're never going to get like the same sound more than once, honestly. I think they're getting very like Dave Matthews fishy recently. Sorry, not Dave Matthews. Grateful Dead. They're getting very Grateful Dead and fishy. Getting real big into jam band stuff, and I think that's a really interesting direction for them to take.
I think this is the first time someone's mentioned Dave Matthews Band on this thing.
I'll bring him next meeting. We'll have a discussion about Dave Matthews.
Dave Matthews Band deep dive.
Please don't.
Hey, listen, I've been to like a bunch of concerts of theirs. I got dragged there a couple times. Don't want to say dragged.
You've seen the Dave Matthews Band?
They're like not bad. Like, sidebar Dave Matthews Band time, but their drummer, Carter Buford's his name. He's so good. He's cracked. Like, he's the best part of the whole show. He's just back there just like shredding it. And Dave Matthews is just up there like, you know, doing what he does, whatever that is. But I go there just for the drummer most of the time. He's just so good. And they played a David Bowie cover last time, so that was really awesome. They played Let's Dance, and I was, like, standing and pointing. I was like, that's the song! I thought they're playing that! I know that one! Anyway,
Shout out Dave, friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
Oh, no.
Real fans call him Dave.
Ay.
Oh, God. And then...
Where are we at?
We've got a couple other songs. There's a second Wayne song I do want to touch on, though. This one's Voodoo Lady. It's so good. It's such a good song. I'm sorry. I see that about every single Wayne song. I'm not biased at all. It's just... But this one... Like, it's almost got like a tribal thing going to like that kind of like the beat to it. The studio version's fine, but there's like a live version they put out on their Ween's Live in Chicago album, which is incredible. It's like 9 minutes long, and they just like jam it out for like 9 minutes. It's 9 minutes long, and they jam it out for 9 minutes. Go figure that. It's just the immensely superior version of this song. No offense to like the studio version, but I don't know. It's so good. It's a magical experience. I wish I could have got to see them live. But that's okay. I'm going to live with it.
You may yet.
Maybe when Oasis breaks up, we'll get him back.
Right.
So, like,
right.
2 weeks from now. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fantastic. And then another artist here, which I kind of, well, at least this one album I got into a lot lately, that's Thomas Dolby. And He's one of those guys who's like, he's famous for his one song, but like when you look into him, he just starts appearing in places you would never expect to see him.
He was like behind the scenes, keyboardist,
absolutely,
for just huge groups.
I know, like, but Def Leppard was one. He was on their whole.
He's on Pyromaniac.
Never heard of this man in my life.
Thomas Dolby.
Yeah, never heard
of
him.
She blinded me with science.
Science.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay, I know that. But like, what are some of the, other than like Def Leppard, what are some of the like big cuts he's been on?
Oh, he worked with David Bowie very briefly.
Yeah, Live Aid. He plays with him on Live Aid. He made him play for David Bowie for Live Aid. He said that he wasn't going to play for him if he didn't play TVC15 live for like a million people. So I respect that a lot out of him. That was a power move by Thomas Dolby. And he listened. So like, you know, if you need to know anything about Thomas Dolby, is that David Bowie, he listens when he tells him to play a song.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember too much of how I thought about David Bowie while he was alive, but I'm pretty sure if he asked me to do something, anything, can you just carry my bags? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But then you think
doesn't
about
matter what level of professional musician
Thomas Dolby got him to do something for Thomas Dolby, and that's a power move right there.
Yeah.
Especially playing like a goofy song like TVC15. Great song, by the way. But we're talking about Thomas Dolby right now, not David Bowie. He'll get.
Yeah.
We'll talk about him.
We'll
at some
get
point.
To David Bowie.
Quick, interesting fact about Thomas Dolby. Worked at Nokia for a while.
Oh, yes.
And
this.
Wrote a lot of the ringtones that are still on your phone.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was a big guy that wrote like an early guy for writing music on a computer.
Yeah.
And it very naturally transitioned for him to start writing ringtones. And some of the like the proper classic ringtones that you know, love/hate, were actually written by Thomas Dolby.
Wow. Yeah. Speaking of these like British, like new wave one hit wonders, like I think that like these people, like they show up and they got the one song and everyone's like, that's all they ever think about him. But a lot of them, I think especially the other one I want to talk about was The Buggles. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. Video Killed the Radio Star.
I'm pretty sure we've all heard of The Buggles.
Yeah, okay, good. Fantastic. Friends of the show. The main guy from that, what's his name? Trevor Horn, I think is his name. I mean, I don't know, but I know that like they went on, along with Thomas Dolby, to be like hugely influential in like the whole new wave scene, just behind the scenes producing people and all that. So I guess like a lot of these albums are just like these like big time producers just kind of like, all right, maybe I'm going to try one for myself. And they do that. And then they're like, okay, that's enough. And they go back to just doing whatever they want.
Let me take a crack at it.
Yeah. Anyway, the song itself, though, Airwaves, it's such like, it's just really cool, like ethereal, like ballad song. The synth soundscapes this guy pulls out, it's just crazy. Like he's a master at it, obviously. That's like his whole thing. The song title is accurate. You're just like floating in space, kind of like, you know, in the airwaves, if you will, as the song says.
Mm. Like it's really good. Chill jam.
Chill Jam, great song. The song after this one goes out to a friend of the show. Thank you for playing, what was it say here? Virtual Insanity. Thank you for bringing that one in.
Mm.
You know who you are. Thank you for bringing that.
Thank you.
And then there's this Pokemon song here.
Oh, we won't even
maybe
get
the
into
same
it because I could talk about Pokemon soundtracks for hours. I've listened to so much Masada soundtracks. Every Pokemon game pretty much has a great soundtrack. This is from the fourth generation of Pokemon games, Route 228, where they just went, hey, what if Pokemon music was jazz influenced? And it really, really worked out.
It does.
It's
really
good. So this record is a very jazzy interpretation of music that already was jazz influenced. The original game was, I don't even think, a recorded orchestra. I think it might have still been electronic sounds. Mm. But it's one of those songs that you hear it and you don't immediately go, this was out of a video game.
Mm-hmm.
But when you hear it in context in Route 228 in Pokemon Diamond post game, you go, this is great. This exactly fits where it's at.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I do recommend going and listening to the jazz album.
It's
of
really good.
Pokemon music. You can go listen to the original Pokemon music. It's great, but orchestral versions really kind of let it shine.
Yeah,
as
it does.
To these people weren't just writing video game music, they were writing good music.
Very good. One last song here that got played. It was off of a, I think it was like a Bollywood soundtrack album. And I just want to shout out the name of this album, which is hilarious to me. It's Bombay the Hard Way, Guns, Cars, and Sitars. So that's a powerful album name.
That's a good name.
No, yeah, absolutely. That's all I really have to say about it. It's a, I guess it's a good song. I listened to it at the meeting. I haven't really come back to that one, but still, I just appreciate the name. It's a good little album name.
Every meeting, stuff gets played it's like, where did this come from? This is so esoteric, and I love that.
People have deep cuts, deep cuts. I love it when people play stuff that I, like, when I'm making these playlists, I have to, like, dig to find out any information about it so I can, like, put it in a spreadsheet. It's such a pain, but, like, I love doing that. I love getting into, like, the deep dives of this kind of thing. This is one of those songs. This one took me a long time to actually find. It's on Spotify somehow, but it took some digging. Well, I think that about does wrap it up for today, though. If you're interested in coming to any of our meetings, feel free to check out the link that's going to be included with this podcast. You'll find our website there. You're going to find all the information you're going to need about our meeting themes, our meeting dates, how you can get involved with the club. Everyone's welcome, no matter how much experience you have with vinyl. If you have a massive collection of like 5,000 records, or you just don't even own any at all, and you just want to hang out with people who have good music taste and expand your own musical horizons, you're welcome. Community, staff, student, anybody. It's a great group of people, and we hope to see you at one of our meetings sometime soon. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope to see you next time. Bye-bye now.
Love you.
Love you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Connecting you with Lansing Community College, this is LCC Connect.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
K-12 Operations at Lansing Community College is a proud collaborator of the Lansing Promise Scholarship, offering graduating high school seniors who live within the Lansing School District and attend a high school within district boundaries an opportunity to attend LCC. The scholarship offers 65 credits over the course of 4 years from high school graduation. For more information on the Lansing Promise Scholarship at LCC, please visit lcc.edu/hope.
Far from the city where the Lorax roams free is the home of a magical truffula trees. They grow happy and healthy and thick as you please, just waiting for visits from yous and from me's. In a place you will love with things you'll adore us, it's a magical spot. We call it the forest.
Look, everyone here needs the trees.
And who are you?
Wait, I'm the Lorax. Guardian of the forest. I speak for the trees.
Visit the animals. Come see the plants. From the mighty sequoia to the tiniest ants. Discover its beauty. Take time to relax. See brown barbalutes or even the Lorax.
I feel so alive. I just like hearing you say it.
The forest is there for you to explore. So come once to see it, then come back lots more. Visit discovertheforest.org. This message has been brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
I'm Stephen Cutter, and I host a show called Coach Cut's Corner here on LCC Connect. Coach Cut's Corner is about Lansing Stars baseball program, mental performance, and just getting better in everyday life. You can always find more about LCC Connect shows and listen on demand at lccconnect.org.
I'm a retired school psychologist, and helping people was my thing. After my stroke, when Meals on Wheels started, I was on the other end of the stick, so to speak. My name is Julius Gaines, creative writer, poet, photographer.
One in six seniors faces the threat of hunger, and millions more live in isolation. Drop off a hot meal and say a quick hello. Volunteer for Meals on Wheels by donating your lunch break at americaletsdolunch.org. This message brought to you by Meals on Wheels America and the Ad Council.
By utilizing interactive activities, the Youth Summer Camp at LCC gives kids in grades 2 through 12 the chance to explore science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics. Scholarship opportunities are available. Details can be found at lcc.edu/seriousfun.
This is WLNZ Lansing. You're listening to LCC Connect, a weekly program that features the voices, vibes, and vision of Lansing Community College. To find out more about LCC Connect programs or to listen on demand, visit us at lccconnect.org. LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.